Voice Radio. Thank you for tuning in today. My name is Henrik, and we are coming to you from the west coast of Sweden. And we are hurling towards the summer solstice here. We're in for a month or so now when the sun hardly sets up here. Wherever you are around this globe, I hope you're well, taking it easy and enjoying life. You can find us and more of what we do at redicecreations.com. Richard Grove was trained in business management and administration. He worked in the World Trade Center in 2001 and discovered corporate ties to 9/11. He blew the whistle but was met with deaf ears by the corporate media. He proved in court that the SEC, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, was involved in covering up the biggest financial fraud in America. And he learned that if he wanted anyone to ever know what happened, that he would have to learn how to create media. And he did. He released Project Constellation, several films and many hours of talk radio. Richard is also behind the website tragedyandhope.com. Tragedy and Hope creates educational media and provides a comprehensive open source educational model for adults, providing individuals with the resources to attain coherent perspectives at and above the PhD level. So Richard is with us today to discuss useful tools of learning versus the indoctrination of schooling. Great to have you with us here on Red Ice Radio, Richard. I've been aware of your work for quite some time now, so it's way overdue that we get together and talk about it. Thanks for coming on today, Richard.
Henrik, thank you for inviting me on. I would like to express my gratitude to yourself and everyone else that's the kind of the silent partners behind Red Ice Creations, because I've been a fan and listened for the past 6 years, and it's some of the most not only provocative and like nutritious for your mind, but it's consistently of a high production value, and every interaction that I've ever had with you guys has been the utmost of professional. I think there's a lot of people here in America who could, you know, take a cue from that and look and see, you know, that there's a value of being commercial free, not having advertisements on your site, having a members area where you do add real value, and you're giving them, you know, you're giving the public what they need for free, and those who want to support you also have this option to dig deeper. And I think that's a voluntary choice that it is something that we also do here at Tragedy and Hope. So I see a lot of similarities over the years, and I'm very pleased to be able to have this discussion with you.
You bet. Thank you for that, Richard. And I agree. I think it's a good format, if you will. Hence, that's why we created it. And there's multiple different ways out there, I guess, of how you can do it. But why don't we talk first a little bit about Tragedy and Hope, the project, I guess we can call it, the website, the media website that you guys have put together, who you're working with, and introduce yourself a little bit to our audience here, Richard, for those who might not be aware of you already.
Well, tragedyandhope.com is a website that acts as a portal for other independent media producers other than myself, who also are commercial free and shun the advertising model. You know, I look at it as you have to be a little bit more creative and do a lot more work to do it our way, but I think the audience benefits it because we're not, you know, kind of stealing their time all the time involuntarily. So what we try to do is to produce a quality of media that complements what's out there but also takes a step beyond what's, you know, maybe more popular than ours. So we provide tools for self-education. So if you're overcoming the public schooling system and you want to understand what type of education the elite ruling class are receiving and how they think, not only so you can protect yourself, but also so you can become more productive and find autonomy and not be so dependent on the system. From there, once we've started, like, you know, once people have started their independent education and they've come to some logic and reason skills, we then encourage them to continue doing research and help us to, you know, kind of flesh out all these different areas of occulted information that is useful, that has been hidden purposely by the elite ruling class, and this power gap is how they create the financial gap. That's how they create, you know, it's all the same thing. So their power and money and expression of greed is all based upon the unwitting participation of billions and billions of people. So we try to get as many of those people around the world to participate in our community and educate themselves, start doing research, and then the output of that would be our media productions, which are, you know, advertising and commercial free. They're to the point. We do a podcast called the Peace Revolution Podcast, which, like Red Ice, is also the idea of coincidentia oppositorum, this union of opposites. to find a truth, a deeper truth than what's been presented through traditional media and education.
Really good.
So that's kind of a summary of some of the things we do.
Absolutely, and you do it real well as well. We have a common friend. He's not a personal friend. I don't know him per se, John Taylor Gatto, but I would consider him it's almost like a nice old grandfather figure or older uncle, something like that. We had him on the program, and you, of course, have done an excellent DVD series on you know, his life work, basically, the ultimate history lesson. And it seems to me then that education, if you will, or maybe the lack of good education is one of the main focus for at least you personally, Richard. Is that correct, would you say?
Well, I guess from my perspective, I grew up doing really well in public school, and I excelled. I found it to be very easy to do what they wanted me to do. So I got to graduate college and got to work in the high-tech industry, and my impression was that I had a lot of knowledge, and therefore I wasn't asking any questions as I went through my day. I was just getting things done and making a lot of money. And at one point, my illusions came up against reality, and reality's like a wall, and when your illusions hit them, they kind of smash, and you're left to try to put things back together and figure out what is really going on. And it was kind of a rude awakening for me, and I wasn't surrounded by too many people who had any idea what was going on. So I had to stop and observe and identify, what are the moving parts of these different political and economical, traumatic experiences that are going on, and really identify the contradictions and remove them so that I could achieve a cogent understanding, an understanding that actually reflected the terrain and not the corrupted map that they give everybody, if you will.
All right, really good. What are some of the new things that you guys are working on now? You told me a little bit before we began here about a new TV media online project that you're doing. Tell us a little bit about this. Sounds really exciting.
Well, if you follow the production of our, the various pieces of media over the past 6 years, you'll see a trend. And the trend is my trying to communicate that which I'm experiencing, that which I've experienced, that which I'm learning, all these sort of things, and make it a useful stream of content so that people can kind of learn from my mistakes and not have to make those mistakes themselves. Also finer, pieces of research that I want to include in there. It's a good place to put it out there and proliferate it and hope that it gets into the future, because unless we all get together and really get something done here, there's generations in the future who are going to be looking for the same answers that we're already finding and putting so much work into. So what I tried to do was, I started out with a blog, and that was July 4th, 2006, and then I started my first podcast, 9/11 Synchronicity, in July of 2006, July 22nd, which was the second anniversary of the 9/11 Commission Report. And so what you see over the years is, 9/11 Synchronicity was more esoteric. Peace Revolution, our recent podcast, is more of a adult curriculum that can teach you a more open understanding of the world, a more realistic understanding than any college is offering out there. And so we have continued to try to present these ideas in different ways. And what I discovered was I looked at what I was doing every day to consume news and to be informed on my own. And there were certain pieces that I was frustrated with. And I said, well, instead of being frustrated, how would I resolve these things? And what we came up with was, if we built an internet television studio downstairs using some of the equipment that we had, and we ran a little chip in widget to raise the money that we didn't have, we could actually create a place where we didn't have to recreate the wheel, set up all the lights, set up all the cameras, because those types of hindrances prevent you from being productive on a consistent basis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So we had produced a video pilot in 2010 called What You've Been Missing, and it was about two and a half hours, exposing the noble lie. And it was showing how this idea of the noble lie that's in Plato's Republic, that's used to control the people by the ruling class, has permeated up through today and takes the form of the neocons and the Likud party and other, Aspen Institute, other New World Order type of working groups and foundations that are basically there to promote the idea of Anglo-Saxon rulership through the Cecil Rhodes legacy of De Beers and the Rothschild banking empire. So it was hard to produce because we were doing it on green screen. There was a lot of virtual aspects to it. People really liked it, But we didn't have the wherewithal, that we didn't have the budget or the time. It was too. It took like a month to make one episode.
Well, and I so know we that. The production. Right? I mean, it's incredible when you work on it, especially if you don't have, you know, many people there constantly, you know, looking through the footage or making the edits or animations.
Yeah, it was just me. So I was writing a script and I was like, okay, Paul, I would like you to make this point and, you know, here's some verbiage and make it your own. And it didn't feel as good as I knew it could be. So what we did was, I took some time and thought about what we could do better. I kept producing the podcast. And then it came to me that what we could do is create a show that's more like a documentary about people going through the news and having to make their own connections and having to make it useful, sharing that process with the audience and do it in an episode-based fashion. So we would, at first, for instance, we would take a week's news and take some of these stories that are all connected and then build out the context so that it's actually useful. So this story about the rights to the prequel of The Passion of the Christ being owned by the government after this, you know, drug bust and the drug dealer had bought the rights or stolen the rights. And it's this crazy story, but when you get into it, it then ties to the Fast and Furious with our attorney general. It then ties into drug smuggling. It then ties into this FBI investigator who's, you know, arrested for pedophilia. It, you know, it goes into some really crazy, real things that are going on, but you're not seeing these on your news. And if you are, it's always in a fragmented, you know, fashion,
yeah,
where it's like, now this, and then they, you know, or they show you some, you know, commercial, and it's like, take this drug if you don't feel good. Be happy. If you're not happy enough from that drug, there's another drug that'll make you happier, right? And so it's really getting to be a continuing state of idiocracy here in America. And when Mike Judge wrote that film a couple years ago, like, I'm sure he thought it was probably 20 years off, but it is fully here. Mm-hmm. And I see things every day that make me think, look, this is all due to the absence of logic and reason. This is all due to Prussian schooling. There's a root cause to all the problems that we're looking at out there. And really, if you get down to it, I mean, the root cause of how they control us is through fear. And fear is, you know, something that they put there on purpose because they want your rights. They want control of your mind, and they do that through fear. Because if your rights weren't so valuable, why would these people go through so much trouble and expense and risk to undermine your rights all the time?
Yeah.
And then I thought about it, and I was like, well, what's scary to people? Well, you could be scared of spiders or snakes, or you could be scared of serial killers. Well, if you break that down, what is the root cause of that? They take away your free will. They take away your ability to act and maybe your ability to live. And so once the ruling class made this discovery, they're like, wow, we can control everybody. They can take away your rights and thus artificially elevate like their selfish endowment and entitlement to the world. So what you find is there's very simple ideas that are being used in very complex ways to control all the people on this planet. And what we've really tried to focus on, and it's evident through any of our media, is trying to find the root cause and then help to communicate that in a way such that people can not only understand and internalize it and digest it and make it part of themselves, but also so they have a chance to communicate with their loved ones and their friends, their family, their colleagues, because we're all surrounded by people who are being adversely affected, who have lost their right to know, and who's going to give it back to them if we don't learn to take these skills upon ourselves? And I didn't get into this because I wanted to be behind a microphone or, you know, make films. All I wanted to do was really get back to where I was before the illusion blew up. But I wanted to be in reality, not in an illusion. And so to get back there, you have to do a lot of, dare I say, re-education, because we weren't educated in the first place. We were schooled. We were conditioned, you know, to be interchangeable parts in a corporate system. That is not the information we would have exposed ourselves to if we had the right to informed choice. And if someone takes away your right to informed choice, again, this is about your rights, they take away your ability to survive. And that's every bit as serious as somebody trying to stab you in the back.
You mentioned, that's a really good point, that the problem with a democracy, there's many problems with it, but one of the main ones is that it relies on, it must, if it's even the idea is going to work, it must be based on something that people actually can make proper judgments on the few things that they are asked to, for example, vote about. But the fact is, a lot of people, they don't know who they're voting for or even what they represent, really. They're voting for Well, you know, if we look at the Premier and the American system, they're voting for a personality, someone that they've perhaps seen on TV, and they you know, they kind of like how they talk or look or something like that. It's very, very superficial. But in your view then, Richard, is there any way we can have a democracy still and actually have an informed public that can make decisions? One thing that I've been thinking about is now when we have the technology at our disposal, why not, you know, go put the democracy into hyperdrive and actually have citizens that actually are voting on things that they are interested in and want to have a say in, meaning they could go online. If there's a local decision, they could actually sit right there on their computer and, you know, put the yes or no button in there for some, you know, everything is, it's fairly simple, I think, to actually do something like this. But we're constantly presented with the idea that, nah, it's very difficult to run society. It costs so much money. And, I mean, everywhere we look, it's just problems, problems, problems. But, you know, democracy, is there anything that indicates that actually might work? What do you think, Richard?
Well, I think there's a lot of hope, and I think that things can work out. I don't know if it's through democracy, because when you get into the definition of the word democracy and you actually see how it's been used through time, that might not be the system we need. We might need something that we don't have a name for yet, and that might be why it has eluded us this long. But what I would observe is it's the illusion of knowledge that prevents people from discovering and asking questions, and that is what keeping people from actually learning and asking these questions of who, what, where, when, why, and how to understand the basics of something like voting. Now, before you decide on what candidate you want to go vote for, let's make sure that when you cast a ballot, it actually connects causally to the result. And what you'll observe is the results are driven by lobbyists and advertising and PR firms and slush funds and rigged election ballot boxes and electronic voting fraud and vote counting fraud, because I care not who votes or how many they vote for. It's all about who counts the votes. I think that's a Lenin quote. If I can muck it up to that, it's a bad paraphrase. But the point is, before you go and engage in believing that someone else can make better decisions for you than you can, before you go outsource your choice, your volition to somebody else, I would make darn sure. Like, I wouldn't outsource what I'm having for dinner to somebody else if I had the choice. Let alone let them, you know, have nuclear weapon access and all this other stuff to wage war, because the governments are all based on force, fraud, and coercion, and they use the military to back their law. And this is the convection current of power that's funded by the banking class and the elite ruling class and the royal class that still very much exists and meets around the world. Bilderberg, that's going on this week, is a great example of that.
Yeah.
It started by the Knights of St. John, also known as the Knights of Rhodes, and some of these other groups. So you have the Military Order of Malta that creates a corporate working group, and many of the heads are also involved in these other secret societies, many of which you've done an excellent job of interviewing the authors and researchers on your show, because that's why I listen. I don't listen for entertainment. I listen because I needed to hear the Eric John Phelps Vatican Assassins interview, or even the recent interview that I was just listening to with Tom Horn, because the idea of Petrus Romanus, I don't know if he's entirely correct, but it's interesting about the Yale archives and all these other archives that they're putting together. And you're asking questions and getting people to think in directions that they're not thinking in, and you're not telling them what to think. You are showing them how to think. How you think is to put provocative information in front of people, let their curiosity and their access to Google or Startpage or any of these other places where you can start to dig in. And so you are constantly providing the opportunity for your audience to outgrow this status quo, to grow in the light direction, if you will. And I think that's why, you know, using the internet gives us hope these days, if we learn how to use it for something other than pure entertainment, and if we learn to use it in a way that the corporations aren't benefiting from every move we make. And so I think that you make that possible. We've made that possible over the past 6 years. And that's the idea of being able to, you know, just recognize this place for what it is. And once you understand that you're not a slave, that you're a prisoner, once you're a prisoner, you can escape. But there's a great prevailing mood of what's called drapetomania here in America. It's kind of like Stockholm syndrome, if I can make a Swedish connection to it.
Yeah.
It's where they're afraid to become free. they're afraid to do a little learning on their own, and it's so easy. It's so easy, especially once you get started, your mind gains momentum. You start to exercise your mental muscles, if I can use that metaphor to help illustrate this abstraction. It's a beautiful thing, and we've all been taught that thinking is hard or that any of this is hard. It's greatly enjoyable. It's thoroughly satisfying, and it gives you a great deal of serenity and self-confidence from a real level because you're able to, you know, for the first time possibly, start to understand the causal connections in your environment. And that's where self-confidence resides. That's where it comes from. It doesn't come from making money and buying things. That's what I learned.
Absolutely. You're so right. There are so many points that you bring up that I want to get closer into them and dig a little bit further into it. I mean, we face so many problems, obviously, in the world today. It's no doubt. Many people who have their eyes opened and ears open, they realize this. And if we, for a moment, then talk a little bit about what you see as the fix for that, because I think we're on the same page there when it comes to basically individuality and learning. And it doesn't mean egotistical individuality. I just mean the idea that we take individual responsibility for what we consume, and this also means media and knowledge, what we learn. And to me, the fix, if you will, have always been to get people's, as you say, curiosity aroused, that they have a drive to ask the questions themselves, and hence thereafter, it doesn't really matter perhaps what path they had down. They might have down, according to my view, a wrong path a little bit for a little while. Whatever, it doesn't matter. This is the freedom we all have to think what we want, to consider the information that we want, and this will, you know, make us come to a certain conclusion about it. But if we continue on that path and don't stop, I think we all will get closer to a version of truth, a version of the real reality, if you will, than the one we get presented with today. But ultimately, Richard, learning and the willingness to learn, is that one of the most important aspects, do you think?
I think it definitely is, but let's go, what is learning? It's thinking in a direction that is productive. And what is thinking but the non-contradictory identification of that which exists? And Gatto does a beautiful job handling my first question, because I asked him about the trivium, and he answers it in such a way that he says, let me explain the natural process, the implicit process, not the explicit process. He says, I argue with myself and I write it out, and that's how I come to find out what I think. And I thought it was such a brilliant articulation, because that's something that's totally hidden from us that we're all capable of doing, right? Mm-hmm. We kind of do it, but we don't do it as a method consistently and apply it to everything in our environment to remove the inconsistencies, and that's how they're able to control us. It's through the contradictions and inconsistencies, which we all have the ability to witness and recognize and observe it and remove it, and then our life will improve. But they hide these useful tactics and tools from us, because what we're all interested in is volitional self-interest. You want to get what you want, but you don't want to violate anyone else's volition, because that's irrational. It leads to all the things that we have today. So there is a path of understanding and logic and reason that can be had, but they're not presenting it to us easily. And what we've discovered is that the elite ruling class cannot manage individual parts. And so they realized this. They created public schooling to indoctrinate everyone around the planet with this Prussian education system that John does such a poetic job over those 5 hours of describing the cause and effect, the historical artifacts. Mm-hmm. There's 1,000 references in there.
Yeah.
So we've learned a tremendous amount just from digging in there. And what you find is through and through, it's education, it's learning. It's about learning to prioritize what your needs are, and then your values and ethics go about, you know, how you go about meeting your needs and interacting with other people. And that's where logic and reason and volition come in, because the idea of non-aggression, the axiom of non-aggression that's so infamous with the libertarian crowd, that's actually the derivative. It's the result of a proof that starts with what exists, adds cause and effect, and travels down to, therefore, at the end, therefore it's not logical or reasonable to inflict your will on other people using force, fraud, aggression, and coercion. And yet, that opposite of reason and logic, the force, fraud, and coercion to get what you want, is the very definition of what governments are. It's the very definition of what corporate persons have been doing around the world for the past 150 years.
Yeah.
So it's all tangled together, and it's a beautiful web that everyone can jump in and explore starting from any point.
You're right. Well, the web is well spun, and it's larger and more sticky than ever, I think. But also what you're talking about here is something, I mean, you talk about, you know, how things are compartmentalized, divided into sections and topics and subjects, what have you. But the important thing, as you mentioned before, is connecting the dots, which is also a no-no in the mainstream, if I can put it that way. I said this before to other people on the program, but then you're the crazy guy in the movie that are, you know, having all the newspaper clippings on the wall and running around and claiming that you found connections between things. So they've done a good job of explaining what a crazy person looks like as well, right?
Well, I mean, here's where I started into this. It was back in 2003. I was doing some research. I had a friend come over, and he said, you know, I saw an art exhibit this weekend, and the guy's art looked a lot like what you're doing as far as all these different points of conspiracy of the Vatican Bank and P2 and all these different things. And so what I discovered was there was an artist named Mark Lombardi. And Mark Lombardi was a New York-based artist who died on 3/22/2000. I think it was the year 2000 when he died. In a very suspicious way. He was just about to have his work shown at the Whitney Museum, I think, is who owns it, and the Jewish Museum. There's a couple places that have his art. It's called The Conspiracy Art of Mark Lombardi was the article I saw online. Mm-hmm. And I bought his book, Global Networks, and this book had these giant maps on the wall with all these interrelated topics and people and personages from these nefarious events like BCCI scandal and Iran-Contra, the P2 propaganda, the propaganda duo with Roberto Calvi and David Kennedy and the Franklin National Bank and all that entails. So what I started noticing was there's a microcosmic aspect, there's a macrocosmic aspect, there's a way to connect all this information together. And so what I started doing a couple years ago was using this software called the Personal Brain. And I've built a model that contains about 5,000 people, events, transactions in history, these sort of things. So whether it be 9/11 or Iran-Contra or BCCI, I had to come to understand all these things for myself. So what I would do is I would research the individual grammar. I'd, for instance, start at Wikipedia. I know it's not a completely valid source, but I would use that as a starting place, dig deeper, and then go off of Wikipedia into other articles, archives, etc. I would drag these into the brain model, and now you can see a hierarchical model that has parent-child relationship, but also has, if you will, cousins. So you could see, for instance, that there's a Cecil Rhodes Roundtable group, and out of that comes the Council on Foreign Relations, and out of that comes the CIA, and it works with the Mossad and helped, you know, with Operation Paperclip and all these different things that might come together on any given passage of research. Mm-hmm. So it was my way to kind of help myself understand in a reliable way without including things that don't exist. And so if I made a map of my own that reflects what exists, it would be much more useful than what they gave us in public school. So I continue to use that model to this day. I don't have to change it very much because a lot of these things are static as far as where the Prussian education system, you know, came from, how it came into America, these sort of things. So I added everything that Gatto says in the Ultimate History Lesson into the model. And now it's something I can use on a regular basis. Anytime I need to go back and see what else is going on. Add a new name, because when you add a new name, there's a whole new context. And when I mentioned like the web of history before, I wasn't using some esoteric spider, you know, it's going to get you type of thing. I'm just saying that we're taught a non-conspiratorial version of history. And when you actually read history books, when you read the 4-volume set of Colonel House's papers, which I have, from Yale, at Charles Seymour, so it's undisputable that conspiracies are how history is
absolutely
shaped and formed.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I was just on a show last Friday night. We've been hosting for James Corbett of Corbett Report Radio and the Corbett Report podcast. He's on vacation for 3 weeks. So I invited Brett Vinat from the School Sucks podcast on, and we started getting into Jorg Egil. Now, how would you guys say that in Sweden? Am I getting it right?
Well, is it a Swedish name?
Well, he's German. I just figured that you're as well-traveled as anybody
Jorg
I know.
Egil, maybe.
Thank you.
I need
Thank
to have the spelling on that to get it correct. But, you know, something like that, I guess.
Every time I want to say his name, I'm just going to play that sound clip, Henrik.
Jorg Egil. There you have it.
So we hear about Egil from the downstream philosophical corruption of his work. And so we wanted to kind of humanize him and figure out you know, separate the messenger from the message and really kind of outline how this happened. And what happens is when you do that, you discover that Egill, he discovers that the natural form of history, the natural story being told by nature with humanity, is that toward individual liberty and freedom. Everything that our work is surrounding and trying to promote, Egill discovered that. But the ruling class said, that makes us finite. That means sometime in the future, tyranny is not going to exist. And then they said, we have to take over this whole place now. And that's when you can find hard formulations from then on that they want to divide and conquer, how they're going to do it. I mean, it's not so much a secret because it's all out there in papers. They yeah. wrote all these letters and published these books. It's because no one tells us it's out there. No one directs us toward it.
When is this in the timeline, Richard? Sorry to interrupt, but I have to let's try to pin this down.
1831 is when Egill died. And so what you see is there's a lot of, I would say, parallel corruption at the time that he's releasing his books, like the Philosophy of History, the Phenomenology of Man. You have Immanuel Kant, you have Fichte, you have Pestalozzi. There's all sorts of other people in the Prussian intelligentsia who are then taking and adding ideas and using it in their own way, because there was also, as Gatto had mentioned in the Underground History of American Education, the Battle of Jena in 1806 really changed the Prussian strategy, because they're a military state. They got beat by Napoleon's amateur army, and this is where von Clausewitz starts to formulate his book on war, which is a strategy of how to conquer. And the way you stop a war is you take away your opponent's will. And if you can take away their will at a young age by public schooling, then that would make every Prussian an interchangeable part for their war machine. The legacy of this is 1930s and 1940s Nazi Germany. And so the answer to the question, how could all those people let that go on, is answered in the school system, the indoctrination system, the conditioning system. And then the horrifying realization after that is that that is exported into America, it's exported into Japan, it's exported into China, and every major country on the globe today is subject to the same Pavlovian techniques, the Skinner conditioning, the Wundtian psychology. I mean, there's character Wilhelm Wundt that we talk about during the Ultimate History Lesson. He's the originator of the modern-day PhD system and its importation to America through Johns Hopkins and Cornell mm-hmm. and Harvard. Yeah. And so all these seemingly credible places, these institutions, are actually working groups, business colleges, if you will, all working coherently on a bigger picture, a macrocosmic story of history. And that's what they got from Egill, that they could control and manipulate and create history, that history was dead in its natural form. They could control and manipulate it and forever preserve their power, their irrational use of force, fraud, aggression, and fear through nuclear weaponry, etc., to control everyone on the planet.
Isn't this what it's about, ultimately, that to have, as you say, to take over the natural world, how things flow and about? This is, you know, as someone else said, one of the best way to predict the future is to invent it or make it, create the future. And this way you'll have full control over the chessboard, the whole outcome of the game. And as you talk about this, I can't help to think then as well, considering what happened in pre-World War, well, both World War One and, of course, Two as well, in Germany, the Weimar Republic, and with all these parties that they had there and everything, that this was a test. This was a smaller version of a test on one nation that at that point really wasn't a nation, but it was formed later. To try to see what they can do with that population. That's what you're saying, in a way. And then later, this system have now been exported. It was successful, in their view, and now they've exported that to the rest of the world, basically, right?
Well, I mean, there's so much I want to say on that. I'm going to start with a quote, because I think the quote is what's going to set the context for my answer. It's a quote from Karl Rove, who used to be a political advisor for the Bush administration. And he's in an interview with Esquire back in 2002, I think it was. And he says he's being questioned about how the world works. And his answer is, that's not the way the world really works anymore. We're an empire now. And when we act, we create our own reality. And while you're studying that reality, judiciously as you will, we'll act again, creating other new realities, which you can study too. And that's how things will sort out. We're history's actors, and you all of you will be left just to study what we do. And so what you're talking about is prophecy versus business plans, right?
Yeah.
And when you look at the world wars, you see business plans in action that are prophesied by other documents like the Balfour Declaration, prior that agreement that takes place in 1916. That is the whole setup for 1919's peace conference, which, if I remember correctly, the Versailles Palace came from Rothschild family. Mm-hmm. It was something that they said, hey, this is too ostentatious for the public to know we have. Let's give it to the government, and then we'll control the government. And so when I discovered the work of Anthony Sutton and his fantastic series on Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution and, you know, all these different – how one group of bankers is funding the Nazis, the Americans, and the Bolshevik Revolution, how they're all in control – how this guy's not a conspiracy theorist. He's from Stanford University, from the Hoover Research Institute, and he gets fired because of what he's discovering and the political and economic conflicts that he's trying – not – he's inadvertently creating it. He's doing it subconsciously, but what he's doing is disturbing business, and they can't have that. And then when I discovered the Carol Quigley book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, after which that's where we get the name for the site, because that was such a mind-blowing, credible – you know, like conglomeration. It's just like a brick. It's like 1,300 pages.
Yeah, I know.
And when you get into there, it's you know, it can be very dry in parts. But what he's telling you is the version of history that you know is what's told to the elite ruling class. This is their version of history. This is supposed to be a book handed to a station manager, a station agents, and you know, intelligence and people who needed to know the real version of what's going on. So Quigley spends 20 years writing this book, and he's in the CFR archives. He's in the Royal Institute for American for International Affairs archives. He's using the actual documents in getting out this information. So he says on, I think, page 951, he's like, here's how it works. Here, you know, these group of bankers, they fund the communists and the capitalists. And I couldn't believe, you know, all this stuff that he was dropping out. So I understand Quigley, the man, the flaws in his character, you know, his employment by a Jesuit institution, et cetera, et cetera. I can consider all of that and still have a great deal of respect for the information that's organized in that book, because it's a touchstone from which you can get to all these other places. You can get to Anthony Sutton. You can get to John Taylor Gatto. You know, so it's not something that should be anyone's first read, but after you read the peripheral resources, then you can jump in and really understand this book. And so the idea of tragedy and hope is, again, a coincidentia oppositorum, a union of opposites, because we don't want tragedy alone, but the tragedy is that we are not able yet to discipline and use our minds for ourselves. We need to be able to shape our own minds. That's autonomy. That's autodidactic learning. They want control of shaping your mind. They want you to be a human resource, an interchangeable part. And I think it's one of the cruelest tricks ever played on humanity. I mean, you know, the devil may not exist incarnate in literal whatever, but irrationality is the evil. It's irrationality that we're seeing any place that we see evil going on. That's what we're talking about. That's our lack of accurate nomenclature when we just generalize and say, well, those people are doing evil things. No, they're doing irrational things. And why are they doing that? Because the people around them, the audience, does not have the intellectual self-defense to be able to dismiss the arbitrary, remove the contradictions, and get to what exists, because that reality, that truth, can't hurt any of us.
Hmm. So, in effect, the path, if you will, if you accept this argument, the path that humanity is now on is a path that has been completely created, an artificial reality, if you will, that has been managed by this upper elite that you're talking about. And the majority of people are now stuck within that, which is it's the Truman Show, to use an analogy, and that's scary to many people. But the fact is, I want to talk a bit about some of the components of this, because it's very important and an excellent you know picture that we can paint for people, if you will. But also an idea if we let this continue, Richard. I want to get into that a little bit later too. How far it will go? How much in complete control that they will get. Certainly they have used science and technology at their disposal as well. Some people call it the scientific dictatorship, and this is the science of how to manipulate human beings, to manipulate the brain. And now they're going into, you know, the neuro level of things as well. Where does it end?
it ends when you stop believing things that do not exist, because that's one of our greatest problems as humanity. That's where our fears come from. That's where beliefs come from. Beliefs are like stopping on the way to the place you're going and thinking you're at that destination. It's a rest stop. You have not done enough work, learning, observing, identifying, removing contradictions in order to come to a conclusion. So a belief is like it's a shortcut, and you're not getting to the place you want to go, or it's a rest stop. I mean, those are the two metaphors that I could readily avail to that. But when you mention scientific dictatorship, it reminds me of this Bertrand Russell passage from The Impact of Science on Society. And since we were just talking about education, I thought this was something that maybe I should just grab off the shelf. He says that Fichte laid it down that education should aim at destroying free will so that after pupils have left school, they shall be incapable throughout the rest of their lives of thinking or acting otherwise as their schoolmasters have wished. And then he continues on, diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from an early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable. And any serious criticism of the powers that will be become psychologically impossible. End quote.
Yeah.
So that's a first edition of that book. That's not off some website. I saw it. I wanted to source it. This is how I operate. I try to acquire a first edition to make sure that I'm not reading something that's fallacious, right? Because I'm looking to base my ideas and my observations and knowledge in reality. I don't find any benefit from consuming those illusions. And so what you discussed, what you mentioned in the Truman Show analogy is really you're describing the Hollywood panopticon. Is what I would say. Because the Truman Show, they're building that with the smart grid. They're doing all this stuff with the drones. They're high, like, we live in terrariums, and we need to recognize that, because the cities that we live in are not self-sustaining. They're not using hemp. They're not using natural resources that we could be using. And when you get down to why hemp is prohibited in America, why we can't use this great fiber that has always been the threads of liberty, why we can't do that, then you get back to the same cartels, the same banks, the same corporations who are profiting from the wars, who are profiting from, you know, invading other countries, taking away people's sovereign free will in order to make them cogs in their machine.
Yep, you're absolutely right. There's many more components of this. We're brushing it over, you know, in a fairly simplistic way, although there's a lot to what, you know, what we're going through here. But certainly a lot of components of this that we could go into more greater detail about. But just to try to focus on the other side of this argument as well, which I've heard from some other people, which I think is a healthy way to go about it. Are we giving them? I'm talking about the people who you reference now, the elite. Are we giving them too much credit? I mean, could it also be that these people have an interest here to set themselves up to look as gods, but the fact is, they are not. But if you have an interest of getting into this kind of research and beginning to brush a little bit, scratch a little bit rather on the surface of so-called reality, then this is the works that you stumble into. And here is where they've set up themselves as to be in 100% control of reality, of the human-created world. But could it be that they actually are not, but this is an intention? They want to be this, but the fact is they don't have control on everything 100%. I hear people, you know, flex back and forth in this argument, flip-flop, if you will, all the time. So where are you on that page, Richard? Do you feel that, okay, they're trying to portray themselves as God, of being all-powerful and have control of everything, or is that really actually what's going on? What do you think?
That's a great question. I think the answer is also and. Because here's how I see it. You can't give them too much credit because, when you look at who's in control, if you wanted to say who's in control of this planet, I would have to say it's not a who, it's a what. And when you said what is it, I would observe that it's a philosophic corruption of our reality. It is the belief of solipsism that there is no cause and effect, that there is no objective reality, that communication and logic and reason can't take place and don't have any value, therefore there are no individual human rights.
Mm-hmm.
So people of this philosophy are usually of the ilk that they're going to use force, fraud, aggression, and any means necessary to attain their goals. They are our natural predators, and that's something that we should teach all of our children, because it shouldn't have taken me 30 years to figure that out for myself, and yet it did. And so there's many other people who have no awareness, and they're trusting their kids to the corporations to feed them, to clothe them, to educate them. And what you see is that the elite ruling class, this small percentage of people on the planet, traditionally, through time, over the past 5,000 years, they are highly organized. They have a lot of office supplies. They're getting things done. They're having meetings. They have purpose, you know, even though it's irrational, and they're achieving it. And the rest of us are left to wonder, is there something going on? Is there any relevance to it? Should we get organized? Who else? How am I going to communicate to people? And I think that's very much what Red Eyes Creations and Tragedy and Hope try to do, is put these signposts out there as a warning. And if you're interested in anything we're talking about, that's what all of our media is about. This is the only thing that we're concerned with, is protecting ourselves from these predators so that we can pursue and attain liberty and have some serenity in our life instead of always being run like hamsters in a wheel generating electricity for these psychopaths.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is, I mean, I've always, it's an interesting question to ponder, that what the drive is of some of these people. And some of them never sleep, like Margaret Thatcher. You know, what was it? She slept like 4 hours per night or something like that. They're up constantly working on how to subjugate the rest of humanity. And the drive is close to demonic, Richard. Where is it coming from? I mean, don't they just want to take it easy, chill out, and, you know, have a vacation now and then? It's amazing to me.
Well, I think it's the absence of consciousness. I mean, the world exists. It existed before we got here. It'll exist after we leave. And we have to deal with the cause and effect of what exists. Now, imagine yourself being someone of power, of money, maybe even inheriting it and not knowing what it's like to work. Everyone around you will say yes to anything you say because they want your money, they want your power, and they'll be sneaky and just like you because they have a philosophic corruption. So if you took out the elite ruling class, another generation has already been groomed mentally and conditioned, physically and mentally, to just take over that position. Mm-hmm. It's just like any other gangster organization. And so what you have to do is make, in my opinion, you make art, you make media, you show people that there is another way, and it's much more logical and reasonable, and everyone's volition is preserved this other way, and you have to give them comparison and contrast. Otherwise, if there's no other option, they have that self-victimization where this is always how it's been, this is how it's going to be, mm-hmm. You can't fight Wall Street, you can't do these things. And I found that it was only because I was so naive and was filled with so many illusions of how the world worked, that I forced myself down a very torturous path of blowing the whistle and going to court and losing everything I had ever earned. And that, along with that goes your ego, and you do a lot of growing. You do a lot of maturing. And that wasn't going to be presented to me on the path that I was on. You know, it was just going to be more big American Express bills and, you know, frivolous, superficial, you know, things that I do not need, that I should not have prioritized in my life. And yet, when I trace down, how did I get these ideas? It comes back to media and culture. And so if we're only surrounding ourselves with poisonous media made by corporations, then what's going to turn out is what we have here, a philosophic corruption of reality that infects 7 billion people, basically. And the only way I see to change it in any amount of short time is to leverage the internet to whatever degree we can, making video, audio, posting blogs, hosting communities of people who are interested in researching, and let them communicate with themselves in a volitional way, fear-free environment, these sort of things. That's the only way I can see going forward. I can't figure out anything else to do besides do that and then take a break and rest so I can be creative and then do that some more and continue to grow just like you guys have. So I'm glad to see that I'm not alone in these sort of ideas. And I've always taken, some serenity knowing that when I'm sleeping, there's people in Sweden who are up and they're working hard and they're doing something in a similar way. And you're also being very successful.
Do you have a sense that it is growing, the interest in these kinds of topics, the interest in reality, reality, what really is going on out there in the world? And after all, there's so many illusions, if you will, that one can get trapped in. And I'm not saying either, of course, that they shouldn't be able to exist. I'm the person, I'm a person that just, I advocate everybody to be able to do what they want, as long as it, doesn't hurt anybody. But the fact is that there's, sports and, entertainment, there's all kinds of media diversions out there that people can get obsessed with, of course, and they do, and why not should they now and then? But ultimately, Is it a growing interest that you've noticed in your work and other people's work around the world right now? I mean, many people are talking about it, awakening, etc. Do you feel that?
I think it's absolutely a growing interest, to use the Lessis term, for what I've witnessed, because people are being presented every day with things through the traditional media that they already tune into that are showing them contradictions. And Frederick Douglass, a famous emancipated slave in America around the time of the Civil War, said that if you want to make someone a slave, you have to take away their ability to reason and to recognize contradictions. And I think the downside of his observation and sharing that was that the elite ruling class said, hey, let's do that to everybody. And if you look at the history of the school system, you can see how they procedurally went about dismantling our ability to observe, identify, you know, pull out the contradictions and understand before communicating. They want us all to communicate before we think. It's called, in Latin, it's called citticism, P-S-I-T-T-A-C-I-S-M, for the word parrot. And so cita is Latin for parrot. It's parroting. It's repeating something you don't understand. Same thing that Karl Marx called ideology, I believe. So what you have is you have this propaganda being used to plunder people. There is a great deal of people waking up to this. They're going down the rabbit holes. They're, you know, and then they might get discouraged if they don't find our work or your work, because what we try to do is put an end to that rabbit hole. That rabbit hole ends when you reintroduce logic and reason and learn how to dismiss the arbitrary, how to recognize the fallacies that Aristotle laid down in his refutations of sophists, because these are the ways that people lie. These are the ways that people use language to trick and deceive you, to deny you your rights. And without this knowledge of, you know, 40 fallacies, learn one a day and you'll have them the rest of your life, and you will instantly be protected from these viruses of propaganda, illusions, lies. And that's the end of the rabbit hole. Once you can discern reality from illusion, you will stop falling down these myriad paths. You'll be able to dismiss the arbitrary. And it's not all about people lying to you. There's a lot of good intentioned people who simply have a lack of a reason-based method to communicate, and thus they are repeating things that they haven't validated. They are making assertions and arguments for which they have not presented the, you know, how did this conclusion come to be? A conclusion is an end result. An argument has you know, certain pieces. You have to have clear terms. You have to have true premises, and then you can have a valid argument and valid conclusion. And so I had to go through the process of learning all these things in the past 10 years. These are things that I should have been taught in school or in the college education that I'm still paying for.
Yeah.
I know I'm not alone, and that's what I discovered 6 years ago.
Really good, Richard. This is a very interesting conversation. I want to continue it on the other end of a break that we are going to take here in a little bit. But let's talk about some of the things, again, that you have on the website, tragedyandhope.com. Again, I referenced that excellent DVD, obviously, with John Taylor Gatto about the education system. It's called The Ultimate History Lesson. You had a Peace Revolution podcast. What is Project Constellation, by the way?
Project Constellation is my message to the future that I published Memorial Day, which is today, 6 years ago, May 31st, 2006, something that I had written as I was trying to communicate with media hosts and or celebrities, anyone with a platform of speaking, to bring certain facts to light that I didn't hear being communicated out there, including details from my own story of whistleblowing, discovering that the courts are corrupt, that the media is corrupt, that there are no authorities, nobody's minding the shop. So I tried to, in as calm and comprehensive a manner, describe what I was seeing. And a lovely radio host out of Phoenix, Arizona, named Maria Heller, actually responded to me and said, I want to publish this. And that wasn't my intention. I didn't want to put it out publicly. I hadn't prepared it for that. I was simply just trying to communicate and find some other people that, you know, I sent it to Alex Jones a couple months before, Charlie Sheen. There's, you know, several people who, you know, I may or may not have been a little naive to try to reach out to. But the point is that Maria published it, and that is really where we got the start of our website. I started the podcast after that. And then what you see in the form of Tragedy and Hope today is the top menu. Everything we do is free, and it's available to the public. So all of our podcasts, films, everything, it's available on the Internet. If you are unemployed, I encourage you to consume everything for free. If you have a job and you dig what we do after you consume our work and you want to support us, that's cool too. That's how we continue to grow and support our partners. So the top menu is more about resources for learning. It's got the brain model that I referenced. You can also download the actual file and use it in the software, which is a little bit faster than using it online.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a whole listing of our podcasts, all the films we've produced over the past 6 years, a new tab for our 4 new live streaming shows, and links to our affiliates, which includes Red Ice Creations.
Well, there you go. Thank you for that. We're going to definitely talk more about this. It's very interesting, Richard, listening to this. And also, I want to ask you a little bit more about the software. It sounds really interesting. I haven't heard about it. It's a mind map kind of software, but I guess that's some of the images we have currently up on the slider, on the carousel, on the web page there, correct?
That's correct. And everything that we talk about for today's episode, I'll also post the notes on tragedyandhope.com. So if anyone wants to click into it and learn more than what we're saying, learn the substance behind what we're alluding to, feel free to do that, and we'll make it convenient.
Really good. Tragedyandhope.com, that's the website of Richard Grove and many of his friends over there. So go over and check it out. We're going to continue talking more here in the second hour in a little bit. So stay with us, and thank you for this first hour, Richard.
Rain on me.
In the second hour, for members, we begin discussing how to simultaneously be in the system, yet apart at the same time. We talk about the transition from tragedy to hope and becoming a free individual. There are those who seek consciousness and those who suppress it. Grove tells us about Tragedy and Hope's different curriculum for adults. Richard explains concepts the elite have adopted and the origins of their thinking. We'll converse on the need to define terms, as it can be a powerful tool to conquer fear, expand, and understand how our mind works. Later, Richard mentions how the philosophy of Freud's nephew, Edward Bernays, still thrives today. We have different memberships ranging from 3 months up to 2 years, recurring or a single payment. Just click on subscribe or members from redicecreations.com to read more about getting a membership. Next on Red Ice Radio, we have Alex Newman, Eric Karlstrom, and Winter Lake. Also, don't miss Tom Montauk on Radio 314. Much more for you at redicecreations.com. Stay with us here for the second hour with Richard Grove.